This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, good morning and welcome to The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio with Charlie Dobbin, aided and abetted by yours truly. How are you this morning, Charlie? What's going on?
Oh, man, it's chilly, I will say that. There's a nice little bit of crispness in the air, but yeah. Skies are pretty blue, wind is howling. It's feeling a bit like Christmas.
It is. It's beginning to look a lot like, yes.
Well, where you are, there must be snow.
Yeah, we do. We have snow, indeed. We have a light dusting of it in the Collingwood area, for sure. So it's not, you know, you can still see all the grass, but it's definitely arrived, and it's blowing around, and it's, just that little nip in your hands, you know, a little cold. Yeah, and
that's right. And the snow is not melting. That's always a good sign.
It is not. No. And of course, this is tomorrow's December 1st.
Yes.
Here we are, the last day of November. And and it's hard to believe, only about 3.5 weeks away from Christmas.
Well, even better, only about 3 weeks away from the days starting to get longer.
Oh, right.
That's right. The best.
That's right. Yes, that's true. You always remind me of that, and you're bang on, right? I think the winter solstice is usually, it's around the 21st of December, right?
Yeah, around there. I haven't looked it up.
It's 21, always, 22.
Hovers around there. Yeah,
somewhere in there. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So that's my favorite time of year.
Gotcha.
Anyway, okay. Numbers.
Yeah, I got to give out the numbers. If you live in Toronto, here's the number to call, 416-360-0740. Now, if you live outside Toronto, but still anywhere in the province of Ontario, here's a toll-free number that you need to use, 1-866-740-4740. And please let our producer, Anthony, know if you are a first-time caller, okay? Because then I will give you the garden wings. Yeah, big highlight for us. We love to do it. We also would appreciate if you call often and call early. Call early. You know, we don't always do that. Sometimes we wait until the last 15 minutes and then we can't get you all in. Call often, call early. And the other important one is one question per call, please, so we can get everybody's questions in.
Yeah.
Okie dokie. Do you have any announcements? If not, I'll go to commercial.
Well, just a quick reminder, I mentioned this last weekend, for anybody who'd like to create a festive wreath. Now, this could be for tabletop, wall, or door. Of course, this is all natural materials. There is a wonderful fundraising event happening at the Toronto Botanical Gardens. It's brought to you by Milne House, called Christmas with Milne House. And that is all happening this Tuesday, December the 3rd, between 1 and 7 p.m. There are two different seminars going on. Only $55. All your materials are included. Plus, Michael Erdman is there to guide you through making some stunning festive wreaths. For more information and to register, Milne House, one word, milnehouse.christmas@gmail.com.
Fabulous. And I would imagine that come the 1st of December, we'll be seeing more and more wreaths all the time. Certainly more and more lights and other things popping up on our street and streets around us.
For sure. Even though I put some stuff out, I had friends here from Montreal a couple days ago, and they helped me do some outdoor decorating.
Sweet. Okay, well, we are going to take our first break. We do have our first caller on the line, but there's lots of room, so give us a call. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Oh, yeah. We are back here on The Garden Show on this final day of November, and it's getting chilly, and it seems like the winter weather, I'm going to say the winter weather, because of course, technically, we still have 3 more weeks of fall. We're still, you know, winter doesn't officially arrive until that winter solstice that we were talking about comes. But it does feel wintry out.
Yeah, and there's still maybe some things to be done in the garden, so we could discuss that, unless people might have just gone indoors to hunker down with their indoor plants, but I'm sure that there are still some chores we should just remind people about for outdoors.
Okay, so we will talk about that, but right now what we'll do is we will go to our first caller. We have Ron calling from Toronto. Welcome to the Garden Show, Ron.
Thank you very much. Charlie, good morning. I've bought some beautiful poinsettias from Costco, huge ones. I was wondering, is it okay to mist them every couple of days on the leaves so this way they last longer?
No. Excuse me, no. I would not mist them. There's no huge advantage to misting them. They actually probably won't like it. What I would do, a couple of things. Keep them out of drafts. Poinsettias do not like a hot vent blowing on them.
Sorry,
they absolutely dislike cold. So no cold, no windows, no doors, nothing close by. Feel the soil every single day. Feel the surface. And when it starts to feel a little bit dry, water. Not with gallons of water, but sort of keep it consistently moist and keep them in a bright spot. They don't need to be in direct sunlight, but brightness is important. And if you're really worried about humidity, like if your place is really dry, do a pebble tray from below. So that's the, you know, cookie sheet with gravel, poinsettia sits on top, water in the tray.
What's called spraying with water is...
Sorry, what was that, Ron?
If I spray them with water, is that no good for the plant, for the flower, for the leaves?
Yeah, some plants really don't like to be wet. You're going to find it's going to get all speckled if you missed it.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It's a plant we tend to keep on the leaves on the dry side, but the soil on the moist, like moist, you know, barely moist side.
I see. Okay. Charlie, okay. I've got one poinsettia I've had it for 3 years. Will they ever flower again or no?
Okay, so keep in mind what's going on when a poinsettia flowers. What's happening is the leaves are turning colors, kind of like fall, right? The flowers are insignificant. We don't generally grow them for flowers. So if you wanted to encourage your green poinsettia to give you color, you have to follow a very strict regimen of giving it darkness, preferably exactly 12 hours of darkness, of true dark, and 12 hours of brightness for about 8 weeks, and it will start to turn color for you. I mean, you can still do it now, but it's that darkness. Like usually we stick them in a closet for the night or somewhere where there's absolutely no light for at least 12 hours, but you do that every single day, in and out, dark, light, and you'll start to get the colored leaves.
Have a good weekend.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
You too. Yeah. Good luck on that, Ron. Thanks so much. Okay. Let's go to our next caller. We have Margaret on the line calling from Dunville. Welcome to the Garden Show, Margaret.
Thank you. I had a question with my amaryllis. I've been listening to what you guys have been saying, and I brought it in and I put it in the closet. Mm-hmm. But the leaves are still green, and it's been in there for like, I think, 3 weeks now. It's not
so
doing anything.
Have you watered it in the closet?
No.
Good. So don't worry about it. They'll turn yellow if it's dark and dry. I mean, dry is really what will make those leaves turn yellow. So no water. Is it cool in the closet?
Yeah, it's in a cooler room, yes.
All right. Well, that's probably why it's still holding on to its leaves. You can just keep it at regular room temperature. I basically just stick mine in the basement in a corner in the basement. So yeah, room temperature or slightly cooler than room temperature, but definitely you don't want it down, you know, in a coal cellar room. That's too cold. It's a tropical plant, right? So it wants that. Just it's really the dark and lack of water that will cause the leaves to turn yellow and shrivel up.
And how long? Like I think it's been 3 weeks.
You know what? It's you never know. The amaryllis will tell you when it's ready to grow. It will start to grow in the dark. So your job is to put it away, forget about it for at least 6 weeks or whatever, like just don't even look at it, and then start looking at it every couple of days, and flower buds will start to pop out of the bulb.
Okay, I just worried that not watering it and everything would kill it.
No, that's the thing. I know you're obviously one of those people who, you know, will kill with love. So not too much love, no water. You're still loving it by letting it have a sleep. It's basically resting. Just let it rest. No water.
Okay, good luck on that, Margaret. Okay, I'm sure you will be successful. I can feel it in my bones. Okay, give us a call, 416-360-0740 or toll-free, 1-866-740-4740. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Oh, yeah, we're back here on The Garden Show. And, Charlie, I just was listening to that, you know, that theme song and all those flowers he's listing off. None of them are up right now. They're all gone. They've all gone to bed for the season.
No, and we're all standing by waiting for the next set of flowers, like the amaryllis, to come up.
And the poinsettia. I know, I was just laughing because when I started 3 years ago and I started working with you, it was in November. And so it was middle of November, and I remember that you warned me. You said, well, it's just the amaryllis questions will dissipate come the spring, and they did, and then they always roll back around again.
Yeah, well, so it's such a rewarding plant to grow.
It is. Yeah, mine were, when I put them away a few weeks ago, probably three or so, they had those little shoots up in the middle of them, and they've held there. But until the last caller, I too had forgotten all about them, and I thought, oh, right, my amaryllis.
Time to check. Okay, yeah, mine, I've got like six or seven pots downstairs. They're all just, you know, crispy and dry and sitting in the dark.
Yep.
Having a little snuggle together and a little sleep.
Yeah. That's it. They're happy doing that, I'm sure. Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have Suzanne calling from Burlington. Welcome to The Garden Show, Suzanne.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
And good morning.
It's amaryllis time.
So I as we know, yes.
Mine again, and I put it down the week you said it's time to put the amaryllis down, and I see absolutely nothing. Now, mine did die back. So, any idea roughly how long?
Well, the dream is that they will bloom for Christmas. Yeah. But in my experience, they usually bloom after Christmas. So, as soon as you see that a leaf looks different from a flower bud coming up out of the bulb. So, a leaf is thin and flat, whereas a flower bud is much denser, thicker. You know, it's like a real,
right.
It just comes up like a little, it's like a shoot coming up out of the bulb. But you want to see that. And as soon as you see that, then you're going to take the pot with the amaryllis, put it into a sunny or bright location in your house. You're going to water once, and it will just start to grow like gangbusters at that point. You're like a week away from bloom once you see that bud. But you don't want to touch the pots until you see that.
Okay.
Okay.
I can be patient.
We all have to be patient, Suzanne. You and me and Charlie and everybody included.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have Judy on the line calling from St. Kitts, from St. Catharines. Welcome to The Garden Show, Judy.
Good morning, Charlie and Dean. How are you this morning?
Morning. Great. Good. How's it? Nice and warm down in St. Catharines?
Well, we don't have any snow like my brother does in Gravenhurst, but no.
No, winter's coming, huh?
I have a question for you about too many leaves on our lawn, Charlie. We have a walnut tree and we have a maple tree, and both of them are huge. And we've got lots of leaves on our lawn. Is there too many?
Yes. You don't want any leaves on your lawn if you can avoid it.
Right.
Yeah, so your challenge is maple and walnut. So, I mean, if you have a blower, one of those obnoxious leaf blowers, you can just very quickly, as long as they're not going to just blow right back, is blow them off the lawn into the gardens. The problem with walnut leaves is they take forever to decompose. And when they do decompose, they can really affect the growth of other plants. So in your case, it might almost be better to just blow them into piles and bag them and send them off the property.
Okay, we were thinking of trying to mulch them. Is that not a good idea?
Oh, no, it's great. The maple is a huge benefit to your garden, to your lawn, maple leaves. So if they're far enough apart on your property, and, you know, a few walnuts or leaves aren't going to kill anything, but if you've got, you know, a huge big walnut, you've probably got multi-bags of walnut leaves, and I wouldn't mulch those.
Okay, that's all we needed to know.
Yeah, but you can certainly get out there. I mean, it's a great way to add organic matter to the lawn is mowing over the leaves, just chewing them up on the lawn, unless they're, you know, 6 inches deep. Then it'll be too much. You don't want to smother your lawn, but we love adding organic material, but you don't want to leave flat leaves on the lawn.
Okay, you're an angel. Merry Christmas to both of you, and we hope you stay well.
Thank you. Thank you. You too.
Thanks, Judy. What's the deal with the walnut leaves? Why are they bad?
Yeah, we've mentioned this before. So walnut is a very specific genus of plant that is called juglans, and it produces juglone. And juglone is a chemical that exudes from the roots and is also included in the tissue of the plant, like the leaves. And it is what we call an allelopathic pathogen. So it is something produced by a plant that affects other plants. And what its effect is to make the environment hostile to other plants. It's not a chemical that's going to kill bunny rabbits or kill us. You know, it's not like, toxic, but it can be toxic to some plants. Some plants can work with the juglone, but a lot of them can't.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's just something that's evolved. I mean, my belief is that it's just something that's evolved over, you know, millions of years as a survival tool for the plant.
Gotcha. So, okay.
Because otherwise, think about it. Walnuts are really, really tasty, right? The nuts. So animals would, on a young plant, you know, deer, gosh, all kinds of animals would want the walnut, squirrels, so they'd be climbing and breaking and, you know, getting into this plant, which is fine, but the plant still needs to grow year after year after year. And it is a way that, you know, it lives in its own little narcissistic world. There's not a lot of competition from other plants around it.
Gotcha. Wow. Fascinating. Always fascinating.
Yeah.
Numbers to call us, 416-360-0740. That's the Toronto number, okay? But if you live outside Toronto, 1-866-740-4740. Charlie, you want to say something?
I just want to say quickly, this whole talk about leaves and mulch and mulching them and mowing them and all this other stuff. There is something that I should add as an addendum to all that when people say, what do I do with my leaves? Yeah, there are insects that do overwinter on leaves. Leaves that have dropped to the ground, leaves that are just going to be out there all winter. So some of the insects are moths and butterflies, certain varieties. They you know, they're a caterpillar. Then they create that little pupa, that cocoon, and they attach that cocoon to the bark of a tree, the side of your house, a leaf. And they stay in that form all winter, and then they emerge as butterflies or moths in the spring, given the right conditions. So it is something to consider that when we are mowing with, you know, chewing up our leaves into little pieces, there is a possibility there could be cocoons of little, often beneficial insects attached to those leaves. So is that the likelihood of that being like a large quantity? Not really, but it is still a possibility. Things like swallowtail butterflies, they do, you know, use leaves for the winter. So, I mean, it's not like you're going to inspect every leaf before you mulch it, but it is something to consider. If it's easier, if you've got a big enough property, and like I said, if you have an obnoxious leaf blower, then you don't need to chew up the leaves necessarily. You can just blow them in their untouched form into piles. If you have a nice corner somewhere, I used to do that, like make leaf mulch, just pile the leaves up and then let them stay. Mm-hmm. If it's windy, that doesn't work because the leaves will all blow around. But, you know, if you've got a little corner somewhere, you can just pile them up or put them straight onto the garden.
Gotcha. Okie dokie. Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have Doris on the line from Stony Creek. Welcome to the Garden Show, Doris.
Oh, thank you very much. Good morning to you all.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
What do you got for Charlie there, Doris?
Yeah, I actually have a question. I've been trying to, well, gardening for many years, and I always find that the fall months that you get the pots that everybody puts outside on their porch, Well, mm-hmm. I've always, they sort of call me the, I don't know, I'm crazy about mums. I love the colors of them. They're so vibrant. So every year then I say to the neighbors, bring me your mum plant, and I've got a big property. So I can, you know, it's a challenge for me to try to keep them going every year. So I need advice from you. I guess I'm doing something wrong. I get them going, and they last for a couple of years, and they look beautiful, but I'm not sure exactly when to trim them down at what time. They end up getting tall and wide. I have some that go like 2 to 3 feet wide, but they get scraggly. They're tall. Yeah. They're too skinny.
So this is a great question, and you're right. So many of us do fall in love with fall mums because they're all in full bloom when we buy them. They're bright and it's cheerful, and it's, you know, September, and then we either let them die, leave them in their pots and just let them die out on the front porch, or we plant them in the ground. So remember that the cycle of a fall mum is that it does bloom in the fall, and it is green all spring and summer. So it's not a very showy plant all spring and summer. And when it comes up, it's very distinctive leaf, so you'll certainly recognize it. But you do have to get them in the ground as soon as possible when you bring them home from wherever you buy them, and start to get some roots growing. Because if you try and jam them in the ground now, they probably won't survive the winter. But if, assuming you get them in the ground, it sounds like you are, in September, October, I would just get them in the ground, water them, sort of ignore them. In the spring, I would cut them right down so they're about an inch tall. And again, you'll start to see that little green growth coming from below ground off the roots. Then in the middle of June, put it in your calendar, just like we go through and we cut the sedum down, the big tall sedum, which tends to fall over by August with its big flowers. We cut that down by half. Do the same with your mums. In the middle of June, just go through there with a chainsaw and just cut everything down by, if it's, you know, 10 inches tall, cut them down to 5 inches tall. Whatever height they are, cut them down by half. What you'll end up with is shorter, denser plants. You'll also end up with more flowers.
Okay. All right. Because I've been, like here where we're living, I've been able to keep the one in particular. It was a beautiful white one. And I kept it going for years, and then all of a sudden, it died, which was really a shame. So I have a feeling that I have not been cutting them back enough. I think that, and I'm not knowing when to cut them back.
Two times.
What about, Charlie, what about fertilizer and stuff? When should one give them, say, you know, Miracle Grower, you know, whatever? When is the best time?
Okay, so in the spring, everything is ready to grow. It's all so excited when the sun is shining and the soil is warming up. So you're going to cut your mums down in the early, like in the spring, so right down to the ground. And then you can fertilize anytime after that. I personally would top dress with composted manure, good triple mix. Miracle-Gro will certainly encourage lots of blooms, but it'll also lead to very tall growth. So depending on what you're trying to do, certainly Miracle-Gro once, maybe twice in the whole summer. I would not use it every 10 days, like they say on the package. The other thing is, with mums, lots of sun. You need them in minimum 6 hours of sun every day, and make sure they're getting sufficient air circulation, because that's the other thing. They will get all different little spots and blights and things on them if they're not getting enough wind, air, sun.
Okay, so then in other words, now we had that very mild spell, so I was able to get one that looks partially dead already because they didn't water it enough where I got it from. I put that in the ground then on that warm time that we had about a month ago.
Yeah.
So we'll see. And then another neighbor brought me a nice yellow one just a week ago. So, they're in the ground.
That's
so
great.
We'll see. Yeah. See
what okay. Thanks very much for the call there, Doris. Yeah, got to run. Okay, but good luck on those. The mum lady. That's great. I think that's a great hobby, though, taking all the old mums from the neighbors and planting the garden. It's got a bit of a challenge to it.
Well, exactly. And she, like Doris said, she's got a big property, because mums can be very showy, but also can really, take off and do a takeover.
Gotcha. Okay. Let's go to our next caller. We have Elizabeth on the line from Scarborough. Welcome to the Garden Show, Elizabeth.
Oh, good morning. Another question about amaryllis. I have three that were out all summer long. I brought them in September. And a few weeks ago, I noticed in the basement this 3-inch white sprout. So I thought, okay, so I brought it up, and sure enough, it greened up. Now those sprouts, those leaves, there are three of them. They're about 2 feet tall, but no sign of a, you know, like the bulb that would come up. And the other two, I ended up bringing them up, and they've greened up, but no sign of that thick leaf that sort of is the bulb, or the flower bulb.
Flower, Okay, so what you did, going back to that patience we were talking about, you brought them up a little too early, and now they're awake, so they were dormant. They started to send leaves. Now they're in the sun and you've watered them, so they're awake. So they may flower this winter at some point, but for sure, obviously, you are going to have green, they're going to be greenhouse plants. They're going to be, you know, big, tall green leaves, and you just have to keep them, you know, as a houseplant. Sunny window, water as necessary. Cross your fingers for flowers this year. If you don't get flowers this year, next September, you know, out for the summer, like all winter indoors, spring indoors, watering is necessary, summer outdoors, September basement, and don't bring them up just because you see a little bit of white, skinny growth. Wait until it's a flower bud that's coming up.
Oh my goodness, it wants some light.
But it does, but it won't die. I mean, yeah, I know. So you're going to feel sorry for that little white leaf. It's okay. It will. You know what? You know what is white asparagus? That's just asparagus that's been covered with soil so it doesn't turn green. So what you're, and we still eat it. So what I'm saying is that the white amaryllis leaf, it'll be fine. You'll bring it up eventually. It will turn green when you bring it up. In the meantime, you have to wait. You have to get those flowers, little tips of flowers coming up before you bring them into the light.
But you don't water them.
Nope, no water.
Thanks very much for the call there, Elizabeth.
This is so funny. You know, I'm feeling people's pain on this.
Yeah.
They're really worried that these amaryllis are suffering. They're in the dark, they're in the dry, and are they alive? Aren't we killing them? No, they're fine.
Yeah. Now, you know what? Mine have that inch up each of the flat leaf. But again, I'm just leaving them in there. They're going to stay in there for another, I think they have another 2 or 3 weeks anyway for them to be in there. And, you know, but I'll check them, but I'm not going to feel sorry for them. I'm not going to fall into the trap of giving them any light or any water.
Exactly. It sort of feels like a trap, like they're trying to trick you.
Yeah.
Let me out. I'm in prison. Yeah. It's okay. If you want a big greenhouse plant, sure, bring it upstairs, put it in the window. Yeah. But if you want the flowers, which is generally what we want, then you got to leave them.
You got it. I believe you. I believe you, and I'm going to do it. Okay. We have lots of room on the lines. Give us a call. We're about to take a break. Okay. Numbers to call if you live in Toronto, 416-360-0740. Now, if you live outside Toronto, anywhere in the province of Ontario, 1-866-740-4740. We will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed, we are back here on The Garden Show, and we're going to jump right into our next caller. Maureen's been on the line for a little while from North York. Welcome to The Garden Show, Maureen.
Good morning, Dean. Good morning, Charlie.
Morning.
Morning.
First of all, Charlie, have a very big thank you for you. I had trouble with my rose bush this in August, and I called you about the blight, and I took your advice. And right now, I have 3 roses blooming and 6 buds. Now, my question is, you know, if this was July, I could very nicely cut those buds and bring them in the house, but I'm worried if I cut anything on the bush now that I may actually cause it harm.
Mm-mm. No, you won't. The plants, okay, so that's an indication of how mild the fall has been, that flower buds have continued to form. I think you'll find, though, you could definitely cut them. Don't worry about that. Whatever length you want to cut the stems to bring them in into a vase, you know, a bud vase, whatever, into the house. Keep in mind that you're going to be cutting those roses back in the spring anyway. So no biggie to do some cutting now. I don't find that the roses do great, though, when they go from this kind of outdoor temperature and environment to the indoor. It might work. They may open up beautifully for you, or they may just kind of pucker and shrivel up and fall down and not really provide a lot of beauty. But then again, they're unlikely to do that outside as well, because the temperatures are certainly, you know, getting down to the zero overnight and during the day for the next little while. So, you know what, if you want to try and see the ultimate flower that's inside that bud, no harm in bringing it in.
Okay, now thank you again. All the blight is gone. It's a beautiful, healthy leaves on it. So thank you so much, and I will try. I figured, like, because they said tonight it's going to feel like minus 10. I thought, well, those roses
bring it in. Yeah, bring it in. Let us know how that works.
Okay. Super. Thank you very much, Charlie.
Thanks, Maureen. Well, thanks for the call.
Maureen. Yeah.
Charlie, just before we go on to our next caller, let's talk briefly about maybe gifts one could give to a gardener. I think you were chatting about something prior to the show, and I thought, oh, that would be kind of nice.
Yeah, well, there are certainly, you know, if you've got a gardener in your life, there's always something they need, just so you know. Gift certificates can often work. There are some new books that I will tell you more about once I get them that are great. They're like local books, you know, native plants of Southern Ontario, that sort of book, which is a real trendy thing, is looking for native plants of all varieties for, you know, to include in our gardens. But something that's available right now and easy to get a hold of is the Gardener's Journal. And I've mentioned this before to everybody on to consider the Gardener's Journal. It's listed as the Toronto and Golden Horseshoe Gardener's Journal. It's a source list. It's always revised every year, in this case, for 2025. It all started as a journal by Margaret Bennett Alder. She is still a consultant on it, and she writes a great little story. I think she's, you know, I was going to say 195 years old. She's not 195, but she's 97 now. And and she's a keen gardener, trust me. So two sisters, Helen and Sarah Battersby, took over putting this, you know, the final together every year, getting it published and getting it out into stores or online. And I guess I did have it up here. I've just lost it on my computer.
Okay, well, let's go to our next caller, and then we can look for that during the break.
Well, actually, I've got it right here. It's just gardenjournals.ca if you want to order it or learn more.
Gardenjournals.ca.
Got it.
Okay, gotcha. Let's go to our next caller. We have Carol on the line, and Carol from Cambridge. I have it on good authority that you are a first-time caller. Is that correct?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Well, I am going to give you the garden wings. There you are. Welcome to the garden show.
Well, thank you both very much for taking my call. The reason I'm calling is that I bought the Diplodania in spring, and it was outside, and I wanted to bring it in for the winter. And so I put the plant in a bucket of water to kill anything that was in the soil. And I sprayed the leaves, and I thought I was good to go, brought it in the house, and now there are little black bugs. They're not fruit flies. I don't know what they are, but I don't know how to get rid of them.
Okay. So they are, if you go over to that plant right now and you bang the side of the pot with the palm of your hand, a whole cloud of what looks like fruit flies are going to fly out of the pot, and those are actually called fungus gnats. So fungus, G-N-A-T-S, very common in soil that is kept too moist. Fungus gnats eat fungus. So soil all soil has fungus, but the moister the soil, or the more consistent moisture in the soil, the more fungus will grow and the more fungus gnats that will grow in it. The gnats are the little flying around adults. The babies are little tiny, tiny caterpillars, very small to see by the naked eye. So two things you can do. One is get a hold of something called sticky sticks. So sticky, as in, you know, it's like flypaper. Sticks, S-T-I-C-K-S, made by Safers, available in any garden center or home store. Follow the instructions on sticking little sticks with the yellow sticky paper around the plant into the soil on the sticks, other plants if you have them, anywhere, you know, just put them out there and you will catch a lot of gnats, which will stop them from laying eggs, and water far less. Keep that Diplodenia on the dry side. Only water it when it feels dry to your fingers, and depending on the size of the pot, water sparingly all winter.
Okay, that's fantastic. Thank you very much for solving my problem. Now I know what they are.
Because there you go. My pleasure. Don't be a stranger.
Yeah, don't be a stranger, Carol. We hope to hear from you again on The Garden Show. However, we do have to take a bit of a break, and we'll be back with more on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed, we are back here on The Garden Show, and I do love the sound of that journal. I have to say, the journal sounds great as a gift, but I also am quite keen, not that I'm going to ask for it for Christmas, I think I might give myself a Charlie Dobbin designed pebble tray. I've been meaning to get you, you mentioned them a lot on the air. You mentioned the pebble trays a lot over the last 3 years as a great way of adding that little bit of moisture in the vicinity of the plants that want it without putting the water directly on them.
And not spritzing. See, the thing when you spritz is you do raise the humidity, but for about 5 minutes, right? Because as soon as that water evaporates, you're back to your whatever, you know, ambient humidity is in your house. A pebble tray just raises it permanently around the plants. And our homes do tend to be on the dry side. We turn on the furnaces and our humidity in, you know, inside drops pretty dramatically. And a lot of tropical plants would prefer between 40 and 60%, not the 25 and 30% we end up at.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. There's another gift for somebody who's just a whole tray full of stones. Nice.
Exactly.
There you go. Okay. Let's go
to a jug of water.
You got it. We got Suzanne from Burlington. Welcome to The Garden Show, Suzanne.
Good morning again. Good morning. I have a lot of plants that need a lot of help. my next candidate is two beautiful, healthy Agapanthus plants that have a lot of green. One actually is just finishing its last blue bloom, and I would love to keep them for next year, and I don't know whether to cut them, just put them in the dark the way they are. I don't know what to do with them, and I don't have a lot of bright sunlight space to put them in.
Right. But the thing, of course, is that an Agapanthus is a tropical bulb. And you had it, were they outside blooming all summer?
Yes.
Nice. So basically, you're going to let them rest for the winter. If they're in pots, I would leave them in pots. Otherwise, just pull them up out of the ground. You know, with your hands, gently remove the soil, let them dry down in your garage or somewhere where it's warm and it's dry. You don't want them out in the rain or the cold. They should be inside even now. And then just wrap them up in newspaper, put them in a cool, dark spot, preferably in the basement, you know, sort of refrigerator temperature. If you have space in your refrigerator, you could just wrap them in newspaper, stick them in the fridge, no plastic, like don't seal them up in plastic. So maybe newspaper inside a paper bag, just treat them like a potato, stick them in the back of the refrigerator and forget about them for the winter.
They're in big pots. So
okay. So do you have a frost-free location, like a shed or a garage, you could put the pots for the winter?
Yeah, I could put them in the basement. How dark does it have to be?
Well, the bulbs are underground. They're fine. Like, if they're in a pot, they're underground, right?
No, they're in, like, pots on the deck. Or we're on the deck.
Right. So can you bring the pots downstairs, or do you have to dig the bulbs out?
No, I can bring the pots in.
Okay, so the bulbs are underground, so they're dark.
Oh, okay. But there's all this green on top, so do I just...
It'll just like everybody's struggling with their amaryllis, to put them in the dark and ignore them. That's what you're going to have to do. Just put them in the dark and ignore them.
Tough love.
Okay. Or, I mean, you know what? The other thing is you could, if they're all still green right now, is treat them as a houseplant. Bring them in, put them in your living room window, or depending on the size of the pot, you can let them grow indoors. They will just be green. They will not flower, but you can allow them to keep growing all winter. They don't have to go dormant. It's just, you know, it's up to you. Put them away to let them sleep or let them keep growing in your dining room. But yeah, just choose one or the other, and it's got to be frost free.
Okay, so sorry, we have to run, Susanna. Got a couple other callers on the line. Jean from Mississauga, welcome to the Garden Show, Jean.
Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
I have a black walnut tree. It's way over 50 years old, probably 75. It was here when we came to the house. Anyways, it didn't drop. It had no walnuts this year, not a one. So not that I'm not happy, but I wonder what happened to the tree.
Okay, so we know when it comes to fruit on any woody plants, shrubs and trees, there will be years of bountiful fruit and there will be years of very little fruit. It's absolutely normal. So likely last year you did have lots of walnuts, and that's why it's stuck in your brain that where are they this year? They were such a mess last year, or the squirrels made such a mess last year. So nobody really knows, but we assume it's got to do with the energy required to produce all the fruit in a bountiful year. So the next year, we don't see that same energy going into fruit production. And next year, you'll probably be right back in business of too many walnuts, and you'll be tripping on them in the driveway.
Okay. I just thought maybe it was rotting or something because it was so old.
A black walnut can grow to 100, 150 years old. If, you know, I think this is what I learned 100 years ago at university. A black walnut, we plant black walnuts for our grandchildren's inheritance. That was the theory. I know you laugh when I say that, but a well-grown black walnut tree has huge economic value because of its furniture making possibilities. If it's well grown, it's got to be straight trunk, not lots of branches and knots. You want really clean and clear. And it's not true anymore because we're not such cabinet makers anymore at home like we might have been 200 years ago. But certainly that is exactly why on some of the old farmsteads the black walnuts were planted, were for the two generations inheritance.
Jean, thanks very much for the call. We have run out of time, and we're at the the whole bit. Oof. Yeah, yep. There we are.
And we leave David on the line, so he will have to call in early next week. We'd be happy to chat with you, but we unfortunately have to go. I know. How does this happen? Yep. Hey, I hear you're off to Florida doing some work.
I'm going to be broadcasting all next week from the Florida Keys, so I leave tomorrow morning early. And, I'll be down there. I'll be broadcasting primarily during the Afternoon Express with Liz West. And I'll also be popping in during the morning Zoom with Jane and Andy as well.
Nice. And I hope, and Gail's going, so I hope she takes her bikini and just goes and lies out somewhere on a chaise lounge and just forgets about you.
Yeah, bring a good book.
Or two.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you. Thank you. Have a great trip.
Thank you.
Work hard, but, you know, find some fun too, right? Anthony. Wonderful. Couldn't do any of this without your help. Appreciate it. Thanks a bunch. And look at all these great callers. Keep those questions coming. See you all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.